This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's not easy to recreate an ancient tribal tradition, especially when it's controversial and has attracted angry protesters and media from around the world. This was the scenario when the Macaw, a small Native American tribe at the northwest tip of the U.S., decided to revive its 2,000-year-old whale hunting traditions. The tribe had abandoned whale hunting in the 1920s because of the scarcity of gray whales. But when these whales were taken off the endangered species list, the Macaw decided to exercise their treaty rights and revive the hunt. The government and the International Whaling Commission, the IWC, gave their approval to hunt a limited number of gray whales. In the new book, A Whale Hunt, my guest Robert Sullivan writes about the whole scene that grew around the subsequent whale hunt. Sullivan was living in Portland at the time. He's now living in Brooklyn, New York. His first book, The Meadowlands, was about the New Jersey marsh that he described as once the largest garbage dump in the world. I asked Sullivan why the Macaw wanted to start whale hunting again.
They'd always whaled. And if you talk to anthropologists, they'll give you dates like thousands of years ago the Macaw started whaling. But if you talk to somebody in the tribe, they'll say they whaled since something like the beginning of time, since forever. And whaling was their whole entire being. Whaling was everything about their society, everything about their economy. They were whalers. It made them who they were. And then when the whales came back, when the gray whale came off the endangered species list a few years ago, they decided that it would be a good time for them to try to whale again, to try to get that part of their culture back. So they saw it as this sort of, you know, comeback of their being, of the centerpiece of their culture.
So you have the Macaw starting to whale hunt again because it was such a part of their past, spiritually, culturally, economically. On the other side, you have the animal rights groups who were arguing that whales shouldn't be slaughtered. What was their argument?
Well, their argument was, there was one argument, there was like a legal argument that said that the IWC didn't actually sanction the hunt. And I frankly found that difficult to follow. There were teams of reporters covering the hunt from Seattle and from Portland, newspaper reporters, radio reporters, TV reporters, and they were all trying to track that down. And, it became a political question. Is it sanctioned by the IWC or isn't it? And some people felt it was and some people felt it wasn't. But basically, the crux of the conflict came down to, you know, people coming in protesting the whale hunt, saying, you know, you used to whale, that used to be your tradition, but now you shouldn't do it anymore because everything's changed and whales are generally an endangered species. And if you start whaling, some people argued, even if you're just doing it for your tribe, although some people argued that the Macaw were going to try to sell meat to Japan and start a commercial whaling setup. These people argue that even if you just do it for your tribe, it will begin this you know, landslide of whaling. Whaling will just start again all over the world. And all the steps that we've taken to preserve whales, to save whales, will be for naught.
Robert, you're a kind of urban guy yourself. I mean, your previous book is on the Meadowlands, which is like a large urban marsh that is part garbage dump.
You're putting it kindly.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. So what's the importance of this whale hunt to you? Where do you enter this picture?
Well, one day I heard on the radio that this tribe was going to start hunting whales again, and I remember hearing that they hadn't hunt whales in a whole generation. And the first thing that struck me was, well, I can't imagine trying to recreate a ritual. You know, how difficult is that going to be, and what does that entail? Because, you know, I keep equating it to, I was raised Catholic, you know, Irish Catholic, and I always imagine, like, I keep imagining somebody coming to me and saying, hey, you know, apparently we used to do this thing, it was called communion, it involved a guy, there was a guy on a cross, I don't know, but we used to do it, you know, a long time ago, nobody remembers how it goes. We're going to do it again, about a year. You get it set up. Here's some other guys. Do it all together. We'll be covering you live on TV when you do it, if you do it. And good luck to you. And so that sort of appealed to me initially. And then the second thing was that I looked at the map. and I saw where this place was. And this place is on the absolute edge of America, the very northwest tip. You know, I always think of it as the bow of a ship, as the very tip of the ship that, you know, you'd crawl out and watch the water coming under the continent if it were, in fact, the ship. And I just looked at it on the map, and it's just one of those places that you look at on a map, and I'm sure, I'm pretty sure everybody looks at a map and says, I gotta go there. And the next day, an editor called me up and said, you know, there's this story, and I heard about it, and we immediately thought of you. So I went there, and how did you put the question again? Because there's another dimension to it that I want to...
Oh, that you were urban.
Well, oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, all right. So may I address that part?
Absolutely.
A lot of people said, yeah, you were doing, you were canoeing through garbage dump type creeks in New Jersey. Is this a natural next step, you know, covering a whale hunt on the coast of the peninsula? And at first I sort of said no, although someone pointed out that there's a canoe involved in both stories. and that is certainly true. But, you know, the thing about this place, about Nia Bay, is that it's classically beautiful. I mean, the coast is so beautiful. But when you drive into the town, it's part classically beautiful, but it's also a little town that's very much a rural place. And, you know, I think I talk about how the peaks that are the last peaks before the ocean are half logged, you know, and so it's sort of this shop-worn quality that I actually think is also beautiful. And in a way, it's really secret and far away. And even though it was live on TV, you know, during the whale hunt itself, even though there were helicopters hovering over it and the Today Show was filming live from in front of the diner, even though it seemed to be being covered so extensively, it was still this secret little place that nobody knew about. And that's kind of what the Meadowlands is too. The Meadowlands is this place that everybody just figures, I don't need to know about it. I pass by that. I know all I need to know about that place. And in a way, that's kind of how I felt about Nia Bay. I felt like people were saying, well, I know that place. I don't need to know more about that. And I'm going to make my mind up about this because I think I know what they're thinking. And I think that's how they're related for me, is that they're two sort of secret and special places. And I think you have to care about places, you know, you have to care about them, especially the places that people don't necessarily care about a lot right away.
My guest is Robert Sullivan, and his new book, A Whale Hunt, is about the macaw in the Olympic Peninsula on the West Coast who decided to hunt whales again because their culture was so bound up in it. But Sullivan also writes about all the other cultures that came out for the hunt, the media, the animal rights protesters, the people from various bureaucracies and agencies who were monitoring the beginning again of the whale hunt. The members of the macaw who went out in the canoe to hunt the whale had with them a harpoon and a gun. How did they decide to have this combination of the harpoon, which represents the traditional native approach to hunting whales, and the gun, which was, you know, a pretty modern gun that they had?
Well, part of the reason they had a gun was that when they went to the International Whaling Committee, they said that they would hunt the whale and humanely. That's the word that was used. And, of course, that's a word that people picked up and said, well, how is it humane to use a gun to kill a whale? But the sort of idea of it was that they'd harpoon the whale, traditionally, if you will, and then they would kill the whale with a gun because, you know, in the old days, I gather that a whale harpooned might have run the canoe around on what Nantucketers call the Nantucket sleigh ride, and they would just basically wait until the whale died, this slow death. And the idea was that they would put the whale out, to use a phrase that people use, out of its misery by using a gun. This, of course, was a huge point of controversy. It was this idea that it would be traditional if they weren't using a gun. And I found this a fascinating discussion because okay, it's traditional to use the harpoon, but it's not traditional to use a gun. But you often wonder, if they had had a gun in, say, the year 1600, would they have used a gun? And there's this notion that technology has to be, you know, technology is new. Only new technology is technology. And traditional stuff is old. And you can never have newness in oldness and things like that. My feeling is that technology is, if something new comes along, people want to use it. But this is the kind of discussion that I think the gun brought into it. A lot of people just thought, oh, gun, forget it. They shouldn't use a gun on the whale.
So did they end up using both on the whale hunt?
They ended up using both on the whale hunt. Of course, there was some people said we should just go out with a gun and in the tribe, and some people said we should only use a harpoon, and some people in the tribe said we shouldn't hunt whales at all, and some people said we should hunt whales but only once in a great while. And it wasn't always the case that there was one voice, and of course there was a lot of thinking in all camps, but it kept getting all sort of summarized into there go the macaw and there go the protesters, and that just fueled, you know, anger and upsetness.
My guest Robert Sullivan is the author of A Whale Hunt. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest Robert Sullivan is the author of A Whale Hunt. It's about what happened when the macaw tribe revived its whale hunting traditions and angry protesters as well as media from around the world arrived. When you were talking to the guys who were actually on the whale hunt in the canoe, knowing that hunting a whale can be pretty dangerous, you know, particularly when your harpoon is attached to the whale and the whale is kind of freaking out because it's been struck, were they afraid that they would get hurt or perhaps killed in the process?
You know, the captain, I watched the captain quite a bit, and that was all he could think about in the end, it seemed to me. He was so worried that somebody would get killed. And he was worried that maybe one of the protesters might get killed and in the middle of guns and harpoons and everything. But, you know, I remember some moments just standing there in the rain on the beach talking about what would happen. I remember one of the guys said, you know, we were talking to some whalers, some guys who are, you know, it's an Aboriginal nation up off the coast of Russia, and they said that if you fall in the water while you're whaling, the gray whale will come up and look at you, you know, as if you're sort of a jewel being dangled in front of its eyes. And they heard that the whale can get really angry and it'll come after you sort of vengefully. And they would tell these stories and then not say anything. And the idea of a whale coming up and looking at you and being angry, that idea would just resonate.
Would you describe a little bit about what happened during the first successful whale hunt when they actually killed a whale?
During the first whale hunt, and as far as I know, it's the only whale hunt they've successfully completed, you know, since they've brought back this tradition. Well, that whale hunt was just this spectacular event. Spectacular not just because this tribe was going through with this modern recreation of an ancient ritual, which in itself is incredible. I mean, an amazing feat. But it was also this, you know, all the press that was there, all the attention to it, all the sort of swirling controversy right there in the water that you could see from, as I happen to be on the peaks, you could see it from the peaks. You could look down and see the coast of the Northwest, and you could see the streak of the canoe and the sort of blur of the gray whale, and you could see the spiraling froth of the protest boats trying to get in, maybe trying to stop it. And you could see the Coast Guard on the edge of this, sort of trying to figure out what to do. And it was really an amazing clash of cultures, of a culture that said, we're not sure we want whales to be hunted, of a culture that said, we're going to get this live on the news tonight, and of a culture that said, we're going to do this because this is in our treaty, this is our right, and we're entitled to do this. It was this clash of those things that was right there on the water, that was, you know, made event.
Having watched the people who did participate in the whale hunt, do you think, I know you don't feel like it's your position to judge, but did they say anything to you about feeling that it was a transformative experience in any way?
You know, one of the guys on the whaling crew, one of the guys who a lot of people didn't think could even sort of do it, could pull it off, he went through this, as a lot of guys did, saying, you know, after this is over, everything's going to be different. I'll be able to go where I want and do what I want to do, and my life's going to change. And I keep talking about it as a ritual, but this is what you look for in rituals. You know, you want to go in and do something, and you want to feel better at the end of it. But as a matter of fact, when it was all over, just this one guy that I kind of know had trouble figuring out what was going to happen or what he was going to do. And in fact, he couldn't go anywhere. He couldn't go if he wanted to go to Seattle and go to a restaurant. He was maybe kicked out, you know. His relatives, some of their doctors didn't want them to show up anymore. He couldn't show up in Victoria. He'd be told
because
to get
of
lost.
The controversy over the whale hunt?
Because he was a whale hunter. And I think that, you know, there was, for just this one guy I know, disappointment, you know, and confusion, as there would be. But I can report that this guy, anyway, after some time thinking about it, ended up kind of figuring out what to do, and he got a job, and he got his sort of own little business going recently, and things are good for him, for that one person, which, you know, I mean, it took about 2 years just to be able to even say that. So the idea that I could even, you know, because people often say, well, did it help the tribe? Did it help the whole town? Oh, my gosh, can you imagine how many years it would take for me to be able to say a little tiny bit about that, about, you know, for the tribe? I could never know. But just the one guy that I know, he came out of it toughened in a way, and he's got a job.
But it sounds like some of what you're talking about has more to do with the controversy about whale hunting than the experience of hunting the whale and thinking about whales and going back to this ancient tradition.
Well, the experience and the controversy, I don't think the way he ended up is partly due to the experience. I mean, I'd say, if I was just going to say, I'd say 3/4 of it was the experience. But a quarter of it was the controversy, but the controversy was, in this case, the experience. And the modern traditional whale hunt, the version of a whale hunt that happened, was, you know, part of that was, you know, if you're a sailor, it was the idea of tacking the wind of the media, you know. It was the idea that, okay, it used to be you'd have to go out and look at the moon and figure out the tides, but now you got to also figure out where the protesters' boats are going to be docked on Thursday.
Right.
I mean, why is that any less of a challenge in a way, or why is that not part of the mix? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I don't think you can in this case, I don't think you can really separate the controversy from the experience. I mean, the experience was heightened by the controversy. You know, an amazing thing happened the first time they went to hunt a whale. In October of, I think it was 98, the first time they went to hunt a whale, they didn't hunt a whale. And they had all the TV cameras there and all the microphones were in their face and they didn't do it. And to me, that was an amazing thing, because to be an American today, to be a citizen of the world today, and to have a television camera on you, and for you to not do something, that in itself is a singular achievement. That's incredible. You put a camera on me right now, I'd do whatever you wanted, probably. You know what I mean? That's amazing.
Robert Sullivan is the author of A Whale Hunt. In June, the U.S. Court of Appeals 9th District ruled that the federal government had failed to adequately review the environmental effects of a whale hunt, and therefore the macaw should stop hunting until a decision is made in a federal court in Tacoma. That decision could take several months. In the meantime, the macaw's legal team says that their 1855 treaty with the government gives them permission to whale. Coming up, TV critic David Bianculli reviews the new show Boston Public and the season premiere of Ally McBeal. This is Fresh Air.